is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Reuters reporting on the protests in China these last days. Blank sheets of paper become symbols of defiance in China protests. Chinese protesters, writes Reuters, have turned to blank sheets of paper to express their anger over COVID-19 restrictions in a rare, widespread outpouring of public dissent that has gone beyond social media to some of China's streets and top universities. Significantly is that as of these last hours, there is no sign of the, in the major cities, of the continuing protests that were seen over the last several days from Urumqi in Xinjiang, East Turkestan, to Shanghai, to Beijing, and other major cities. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, is my colleague and co-host, and we welcome Jonathan Ward, author of China's Vision of Victory on the China protests. Gordon, I begin with you and your observation of these protests. These are young people who were not born for 1989's events and are in university and have a great deal to lose in their careers. The driving force for this is said to be COVID-19, but it certainly looks like defiance in the face of an authority that wields surveillance power absolutely on their iPhones. How do you measure this protest, Gordon? Is it will-o'-the-wisp, a topical, or is this something that we're seeing just symptomatic of some rot underneath the Communist Party? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. And I see these protests as symptomatic. Now, they were sparked on Thursday's fire in Urumqi, the capital of what the Chinese call the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. But they show a fundamental disregard of the Communist Party. These people on the streets are extremely brave. They're defiant, they're fearless, and they're telling Xi Jinping to leave, and they're telling the Communist Party to leave. So really what we're seeing right now is underlying discontent bubbling up, and I think that this is countrywide, John.
We welcome Jonathan Moore to comment on the historical frame for this. Before we plunge into the facts as we have them, the markets are going to reflect this disruption. But then again, the COVID-19 lockdowns are not fresh news. They're just being reimposed willy-nilly, apparently, by the authorities in various cities. So the historical frame is important, though these young people do not have all of the history. Jonathan does. Jonathan, I divide the Chinese Communist Party's authority, its brutality, into three pieces: 1949 and the founding of the People's Republic of China by Mao Zedong and his lieutenants. The photograph of Mao, a younger Mao, reading a document into a radio microphone that's standing in front of him, surrounded by his supporters. To 1976 and the death of Mao and the release of a great deal of anxiety over the brutality of the regime. And then what is called the Gang of Four disruption, settling down into that period 76 to 89 and Tiananmen. I do not see anything since Tiananmen was suppressed brutally until these protests. How do you measure this present day protest compared to the PRC in 49 or the death of Mao in 76 or the Tiananmen protests and mass slaughter of 89? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, it's interesting that you put it this way, because I think, well, certainly, as many have pointed out, these are probably the most significant protests in China since 1989. I think it's still, you know, we have yet to see what the nature of the, if there's a political message to this. I mean, certainly slogans are being shouted and some are saying Xi Jinping stepped down. But a lot of it is, of course, driven by the COVID lockdowns, which have been going on for 3 years. So you have many people that have lived through this all across China now. And when we put it, though, in history, I think there's something else that we should look at, because Xi Jinping is making an effort to essentially frame his entire rule and purpose in the context of the Chinese Revolution. So as we've talked about many times, the great rejuvenation of the Chinese nation is his major slogan. That's something that he's inherited from prior periods of Chinese history. But really the first revolution in 1911 and then the Communist Party's revolution in 1949 in some ways are considered continuous for certain party members. And something that the Jamestown Foundation pointed out, earlier this month was quite interesting. Right after the 20th Party Congress, Xi Jinping brought the newly sort of elected, chosen, so to speak, Politburo Standing Committee members to Yan'an, which of course was the base of Mao's Communist Party. And that was the destination where they ultimately arrived after the Long March. And when they considered sort of that period had been, period of difficulty had been traversed, and they were now going to consolidate and, consolidate the revolution. So Xi Jinping is also going to make that effort to consolidate his power, his version of the Chinese Revolution, and to portray pretty much any opposition, probably as opposition not only to his own rule, but to the very idea of the rise of China. So I think what we should expect from the party here is certainly the Hong Kong playbook, which worked to very unfortunate effect with the perspective of human rights. I mean, they obviously were able to take violent control of that city. And I think for the protesters, really the most important thing is for them to be able to show the world what they are doing and what they are experiencing. Hong Kong's, the Hong Kong protesters who were able to give the world a constant window into what was on the ground in Hong Kong. That's what one, I think, would hope for today's protesters across mainland China is be sure to show the world what's going on so that we all can see it. Because the party's general apparatus for not only digital repression, but physical violent repression, I mean, that's going to come into full swing, I expect. They know how to do that. And then Xi Jinping is going to turn this into an ideological campaign, I believe, which includes making it about the United States and foreign interference and those sorts of things, which are sort of classical tropes in the Communist Party and certainly for Xi himself.
Gordon, I'm struck by the economy of scene, because we're told that one of the drivers, immediate drivers for the protests, was in Urumqi, the large city of Xinjiang that was the scene of oppression and has been the scene of oppression for some time. The word genocide has been used by the United States for what's done to the Uyghurs. There was said to be, and it's anecdotal, but there's video and we can't confirm it, a fire that led to the deaths of citizens because either the exits were locked or blocked with the steel cages because of COVID-19 or the inadequate response to the firefighting units. Urumqi is the center of Chinese oppression of human beings. Right there, Gordon. Does that have added weight now, considering the protests have spread to Shanghai, which is the epitome of the future of China?
Well, the protests that we have seen since Thursday have really very little to do with the oppression of the Uyghurs, the Kazakhs, and the other Turkic minorities. It has everything to do with just built up frustration and anger at the Communist Party. And, that fire on Thursday, it was graphically demonstrated to the Chinese people that COVID barriers prevented the fire trucks from arriving at the scene. And so therefore they couldn't put out the fire. And that was very clear to the Chinese people that they needed freedom in their lives. And they've drawn that connection by, since then, calling for Xi Jinping and the Communist Party to step down. So I think these are unrelated themes.
You have a question for Jonathan Gordon.
Jonathan, you mentioned that Xi Jinping will probably try to distract the Chinese people by making this about the United States or some other foreign entity. Do you think that this means that he lashes out at Taiwan or Japan or the Philippines or America and causing military misadventure abroad?
Gordon, so historically, I think that would be one possible outcome. I mean, certainly Xi Jinping has ginned up military nationalism at home. And as much as the protests are important and I think give some hope to the world that there's another side to the People's Republic of China, there's something that could push through against this regime. There's also support for the regime in the general population in various places and support for the basic idea of the great rejuvenation of the Chinese nation. I mean, one thinks of the applause lines that Xi got in his centennial speech last year about No foreigners will bully us. They will bash their heads bloody against steel Great Wall formed of the flesh and blood of 1.4 million Chinese people. That was the applause line of the night. So that kind of military nationalism, which the party has stoked, particularly since Tiananmen Square, I think will also come into effect. I think with all the active territorial disputes, I mean, historically, Mao's China fought border wars with most of its neighbors from India to the USSR, obviously fought the US in the Korean Peninsula and fought the United Nations there, engineered various Taiwan Straits crises. So I expect that all of this pulls together in such a way where one release valve that Xi Jinping knows he has is to consolidate nationalism, against an external, another location. So, and the other side of that, I think, is that when Hong Kong was happening in 2019 and a few years ago, I mean, they were able to portray that essentially as one of the sort of, security pieces that's both an internal and sort of external, factor in how they think about national security. But here, inside China, I think it's far riskier for them to admit that they don't have a grip on the population. He's trying, of course, to consolidate support for his agenda. So his agenda includes, as he makes very clear, fighting and winning wars. And his hold over the military, which, as he sees it, was, a direct lesson from the USSR and the fall of the USSR. I mean, all of those factors spell the potential use of force, certainly.
We're speaking with Jonathan Ward, author of China's Vision of Victory, and Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host. When we come back, the defiance is being documented by Western media. Reuters and AP and Bloomberg are all documenting this. There have been reports of foreign reporters being detained by the authorities. As Jonathan says, this, and Gordon agrees, this may be the Hong Kong playbook, but it's extremely widespread. And there are quotes on the media, I'll read one of them when we come back, that suggests that this is not going to be easily crushed by identifying one city and ring-fencing it. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.